All right, let's have an AA meeting. My name is Chris Ward. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the Napa Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Okay, this reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org desperately in need will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And it's my pleasure at this time to introduce the speaker, and I've got to know this guy a little bit over the last month or so, and so I ran back real quick before and made sure I got some basic information from him. His home group is the men's group of St. Luke's, Saturday morning, is that right? And got sober in Philadelphia, and being a Steelers fan, I'm a little sketchy about that, I don't know. But and according to the math, he got sober when I was in about kindergarten. So I went to public school, so I'm probably off by a little bit. But with that, I'll give you Pat McD.
My name is Pat McDonald, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 15th, 1975. I just celebrated my 41st anniversary birthday, whatever we call it, it's been a phenomenal 41 years. I'll say this now, the promises that were read, if you stay around long enough, and at the beginning, just don't drink, and then start getting involved in the program, going to more meetings, getting a sponsor, doing the steps, getting involved by making coffee, doing the stupid little things your sponsor tells you to do. You will see that the promises really under-promise. I can't imagine from where I was when I got into this program to where I am now. It's night and day. I grew up in Philadelphia. Where I was one of seven kids, Irish Catholic family, seven kids in 9 years. My parents practiced Vatican roulette, and they just banged out the kids. I say this, and I got to change it because I likened our family and how we grew up as the Waltons of West Philadelphia. But there's so many young people now, they don't know who the Waltons are. So it's an old TV show back in the 70s, so that's who the Waltons are. We were a close-knit family. My dad owned a bar in Philadelphia, in West Philadelphia, and we lived over the bar until I was about 16. And it was a shot and beer bar. It was not a fancy bar. It was called McDonald's Cafe. It wasn't much of a cafe. Anyway, I grew up. And the one thing that I hear a lot when I hear people sharing their stories that I identify with is that there's that little disconnect inside. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small. But in my life, there was a disconnect. And even though I knew my family loved me and they cared for me and would do anything for me, I just never really fit in. I just felt different. That's just the way I was, and I don't know why that was, and it was just that way. I grew up and I played sports. I was pretty much a shy person. Didn't like. I was standoffish. Just again, felt different. When I got into my teen years, I remember getting on the bus to go to high school, and I had to take a bus and then a trolley to get to high school. And going there, the girls from West Catholic High School get on the bus, and boy, boy, they were, all I remember was they were good-looking Italian girls, and all I wanted to do was go up and say hi, and I couldn't. I mean, I just sat back there and I just, I just wouldn't talk. And that was the way it was all the time. Freshman year, junior year, freshman, sophomore, and then my junior year in summer, I was introduced to my first drinking episode. I had 2 16-ounce cans of Colt 45. And after the second can, something happened. I could talk to girls. I could tell funny jokes. People would laugh. People, you know, all those good things. And it almost, from the very beginning, I remember saying to myself, this is what I need to feel like what I think you feel like. Because I was always comparing my insides to your outsides. And you seemed to have it together more than I ever did. And I always was envious of that. I always wanted to be you, or I wanted to be somebody else than me. And that's when my drinking began. I drank for 10 years. I drank on the weekends when I could in high school, in college. I got kicked out of my first college. I do hold the record there. I got a scholarship to go play football at Virginia Tech. And I had 173 cuts my first year. And you just don't last long in school if you cut that much. And the coach called me in. He said, you're really not about serious about school, are you? I said, well, not here I'm not. and he, you know, let me go, and I was out of a scholarship. That was 1967, and I got fortunate, and I got into the Army Reserve. And the only thing I remember about being in the Army Reserve is that when we were allowed to drink, I drank. And again, that well feeling, the feeling good about myself and getting along with people, I was always that way. I just felt great. And I often say this, that if you're here and you're new and alcohol was magic the first couple of years of your drinking, welcome. Because it was magic for me. It was the reason I drank. I could not stand the taste of alcohol. I don't know about you. I know there's people out there say they love that. Every 2, 3, 4 drinks that I ever drank, I made that drinker's face of, you know, and then just... There was a rye whiskey my dad used to sell called Kessler's, and it had on its label said smooth as silk. And if you ever drank that stuff, it wasn't smooth as silk. But after the fourth drink, it was smooth as silk. And now I know how they came up with that, because the guy who ever wrote that sales line, he must have had 4 or 5 shots in him. He is smooth as silk, and that's how I got it. I don't know, but that's how it came to me. So I was, you know, I can only say this. I drank, put it this way, if Diet Pepsi or milkshakes or water gave me the feeling that alcohol did when I first started drinking, I probably would have, you know, drank that. I drank all through college. Really no bad effects. I didn't, you know, get drunk, and but, you know, I shook off the hangovers, and they were no big thing. After my senior year, I went to my first episode in the bad driving incident was I totaled my sister's car. I ran it into a wall in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And the reason I didn't get a DUI that time is because the state trooper thought I lost my right eye. it was so full of blood, and the skin was hanging down and everything, that he said, we're going to give you a reckless drive, and you lost an eye. And lo and behold, they just, you know, there's all kinds of stitches, and you can hardly see them today. But I was fortunate to get a busted eye like that, not to get a DUI. I had various episodes like that. I graduated in 1972 from Villanova. I had played football there. I had a great career. I had a pretty good career my junior year. I was, you know, having fun. Life was great. School was good. Drinking was fun. My dating career was good. Everything was great. Flipped on my senior year. Came back, had a run-in with my coach, and after the fourth game, I told him where to go. He told me where to go, and he won. It's that rock, paper, scissors game. He was the scissors, and I was the paper. He cut me, so that was it. I just left there. And then I started, you know, drinking. And when you're 21 in a McDonald's family, you become a bartender. And I wasn't playing football anymore, so I became a bartender. Now, where my dad's bar in West Philadelphia was a pretty tough neighborhood. My dad was held up bartending there, and I was. I had the privilege of being held up, having a gun put in my face. And they came in, the police came in and said, can you describe him? I said, I described him. And he said, can you describe the gun? And I said, yeah, it was a big gun. It wasn't Dirty Harry big, but it was a snub nose, and it looked big. He said, probably a .32. I said, yeah, kind of like what you have and all that. And they caught the guy the next night. He had a starter's pistol. And the detective told me, he said, well, you know, when you're looking that way at the gun, it gets bigger and bigger all the time. And I said, well, you got that right. I found out a couple things. That night when he put a gun in my face, I wasn't John Wayne. My first episode of being a crisis Christian, I said, God, if you get me out of this one, I will never do anything bad again, ever. And that was the way I was. From that moment on in my career of bartending for my dad, I started to drink at the bar behind the bar, because we had a lot of bad people come into my dad's bar. I mean, bad people. And to calm my nerves, I just drank. And it worked. It just constantly worked. I drank, and we sold the bar in 1972, and I graduated, and then I got into different jobs, and my drinking turned. I don't know about you, but I went from drinking with no ill effects. It gave me the buzz I was looking for, and everything was fine. And then, as I remember what I said earlier, that if alcohol was magic for you when you first started drinking, it will be a bitch at the end, and it'll kick your butt. And that's what it was starting to do for me, to me. I got into trying to figure out how to control my drinking. I don't know if anybody saw it, but today there was an article in U.S. World Reports or whatever, the magazine, and said, how many drinks does it take to make you an alcoholic? Great question. One of the questions that they asked, they said, do you ever lie about your drinking? Well, I knew that if you lied about your drinking, you were an alcoholic. So I never lied about my drinking. I never did. I thought I was having a heart attack one Monday morning after drinking really bad. That weekend, it was a homecoming weekend, and I really tied one on. And the ER doctor, she asked me, he said, how many drinks did you have? And I said, it must have been, you know, four cases of beer and whatever was there. And all I remember her telling me was, you shouldn't drink beer. Now, I'm sure she said, you shouldn't drink so much beer, but I only heard you shouldn't drink beer. Well, from that moment on, I moved to scotch. I said, hell, don't drink beer. Maybe that's my issue. So I went to scotch. And lo and behold, it you know, I don't know about you, towards the end of my drinking, I never wanted to get that drunk. I just wanted to get the buzz going and keep it as long as I possibly could and then go home and sleep. And I remember numerous times saying, oh, shit, I passed that mark one more time. And how do you go back? You can't go back. And I couldn't go back. Try to slow it down, and it just never worked for me. And that was, you know, my last couple of years of drinking. The magic stopped. If you are the first person that realizes what alcohol does for you when you first start drinking, if you're anything like me, you are the last person to realize what it's doing to you. Because it was kicking my butt, and that's when friends, family, people try to help me with my drinking and say, you got to slow down, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do this. I heard all that. But my big cry at that time was, and coming early into the program, you just don't understand. You just don't understand. The great cry of the last phase of your active drinking, or my active drinking, and the beginning of my sobriety was, you don't understand. And that's just the way it was. I look at that now, and I can see that. I'll tell you, if you're in the program, how many people are here less than say 60 days? Okay. I don't know where you are, but I'm working with some people in the program that are under 6 months sobriety, and every one of them have told me this, and I started laughing when they told me this. Two of them are my nephews. Both of them said at different times, Uncle Pat, you don't understand. And excuse me, I thought I silenced that, but I'm sorry. Actually, that's one of my nephews. Look at that. You still don't understand. You got that right. And it is that was my cry to the people in Ardmore when I first got sober. I remember sitting around the clubhouse in Ardmore saying to them, crying my and whining and doing all the stuff at the coffee table, and them not really giving me the attention I thought I deserved, and then I finally said to them, I said, you guys just don't understand. And all six or seven of them, how many of them, they just start laughing at me. I said, geez, that's not funny. And, you know, they start laughing at me. And then I realized that the longer I stayed into the program, they did understand. And that laughter wasn't a laughter of ridicule. It was a laughter of, I identify with where you're at. And just keep coming back. Just don't drink. Go to another meeting. Get a sponsor. Get involved. And see what happens to you. My sponsor turned me over and he said, Pat, give us 90 days. Don't drink. Go to meetings, and if you think that you're not an alcoholic, we'll gladly refund your misery. And I don't know about you, my last 6 months, last year of drinking, was absolutely misery. I drank about 60 times. I didn't drink daily, because I knew if you drank every day, and especially if you drank in the morning, you were an alcoholic. So if you only drank once a week, and then maybe every third or fourth week, you went out on a bender on a Wednesday night, that didn't make you an alcoholic. That just made you a heavy drinker. And that's what I was, I thought. And I couldn't control it. I remember driving home twice of those approximately 70 times of drinking. I was a blackout drinker. Some of my fine episodes were I drove the wrong way on the Garden State Parkway, only to be arrested in New Jersey, taken to Tom's River. I got a 6-month suspended DUI in New Jersey, but I could drive in Pennsylvania, so I drove in Pennsylvania. I got caught driving again, and this is the weirdest thing that I've ever happened to me in my drinking. I was going down the White Horse Pike in New Jersey, speeding, and another state trooper pulled me over. Well, this is like 3 months after I got stopped. And in New Jersey at the time, they didn't play games. If you got stopped the second time, you were picking cherries in Cape May. And that's why I go, oh no, I'm going to be arrested again. I'm going to jail this time. And the girl I was with, all she said was, good for you, you son of a bitch. Thought she needed Al-Anon right then. I didn't even know what Al-Anon was. But anyway, I got out of the car. At that time, you could get out of the car. I went up to I gave the insurance card, my driver's license. And the state trooper goes, you're McDonald. I go, oh, damn, I got the state trooper to arrest me the first time. And it turns out, this state trooper went to high school with my brother Alex. And he says, you used to live at 56 in Lansdowne. Yeah, yeah. Well, we lived used to catty corner over the dry cleaners. And I go, oh, man. He said, do me a favor. Drive down to the circle. There's a diner right around the circle at the White Horse Pike. You sit there for 3 hours. You do not come out. You have coffee, and that's all you can do. I got in the car, and she says, you're the luckiest son of a bitch I've ever met. That was one of my drinking episodes. I got another time I went over the Ben Franklin Bridge the wrong way. You know, back then they didn't have the cement dividers. They only had the red lights and green lights. And you just stayed in the green lights. You know, if you're going over to New Jersey and you stayed out of the red. Well, I drove down to 2 red lights. And they stopped me again. And they asked me if I was drinking, and I said, sure. They said, go over to the White House, sit there, don't come out. And I got away with it. It was just absolutely amazing how I got away with it. I look back on it now. My last year of drinking, I don't know where any of you are in your last year of drinking or where you were, but my last year of drinking, I tried working out. I tried controlling my drinking. I know when I was drinking scotch, I had 3 glasses. I had the bartender put a glass of scotch on rocks, club soda with ice, and a glass of ice. And I said I wouldn't have another drink until all the ice was gone in all 3 glasses. Didn't work. Got drunk. Just crazy stuff like that. I got into vitamins. I read a book, Let's Eat Right to Stay Fit. I figured my problem was I'm not eating right. It's not that I'm drinking. I'm not eating right things. I took up to 44 vitamins a day. Hey, really, that's like overkill. But you know what? The only thing good comes out of that, you pee gold, you know. You're taking too many B vitamins, that's all. You know, okay. I remember the first time that happened, it scared the hell out of me. I went to the doctor. He said, what are you doing? I said, you're taking too many B vitamins. I said, okay. I remember driving home from bartending, and the 3 o'clock in the morning after I closed the bar down, there was some late night show. I don't know if anybody listens to late night radio. There's some weird stuff on. There was weird stuff on back in 75. And I remember people talking then. And this one person, I thought, had some great advice about how life was and everything else. And I'm thinking, wow, this is really something. I woke up the next morning and it just dawned on me. I said, if you have to give advice at 3 o'clock in the morning over the radio, how good advice is it? And that didn't work. So the working out, the vitamins, spirituality, anything didn't work out. I had a bartender say, you know, it's not that you drink too much, but you smoke too much. And I quit smoking. April of 1975, I quit smoking. I was smoking 2 packs a day. And when I drank, I smoked 3. You know, it was all the time. And it made sense to me. I said, okay, I'm going to quit. I had another person said, you know, you put too much sugar and cream in your coffee. That's your problem. I drink my coffee black today. Yeah, because I figured it couldn't be the alcohol. You just don't understand. The alcohol is what made me feel like you feel, or I thought you felt. And that's all I wanted to do in life, just to be able to fit in. Well, my brother, we had some great drinking episodes. We got into a bunch of fights in New York City and Philadelphia and just crazy stuff. He moved out to California. And in California, he was the manager of a very large Cadillac dealership in Los Angeles. And after my drinking episodes on Monday or Sunday, I would call him up on Monday and say, I did it again. I got drunk. I really didn't want to get that drunk. And boy, oh boy. And this time, it was sometime in April. He started talking to me, and he said, you know, we used to have some great times drinking. I said, yep, we sure did. Boy, they were great. Remember the times we were in St. Patty's Day in New York? Oh, man, they were great. Remember the time we used to go down the shore? Oh, yeah, that was great. And then he dropped a bombshell. He said, well, Pat, you know, I found out that I drank too much, and I don't drink anymore. I'm in AA. That's as quiet as we were on the phone. All I remember, it was one of those phones with the cords on them. I held it out there, and I go, John, I got to go. I'll talk to you later. I didn't talk to him for 4 months. Did not talk to him because I didn't want him to tell me he had a drinking problem and he's in AA and maybe I should try AA. I just wanted a job. Why are you screwing things up like that for? The last 6 months of my drinking was just brutal. I mean, it was trying to figure out how to beat the game without beating myself. And as I said, if alcohol was as magic to you as it was to me my first 7 years, it eventually extracts a major price. My last 3 years, it extracted a price. And as I said earlier, I was the first one to realize what it was doing for me. Last one to realize what it was doing to me. My last 6 months, I was kicked out of all my brothers and sisters' homes. I was also kicked out of an apartment I shared with a couple guys that went to Villanova with. Nobody wanted me around. My last drink was September 1st, 1975. And we were, about 3 or 4 of us, were down the shore drinking, and I drove back in a blackout. What I remember coming out of that blackout was a friend, you'll get a kick out of his name, was Soggy. Because he wasn't the sharpest guy in the world. You know, they had great nicknames back then. If you were kind of slow, they called you Soggy. He goes, hey, he's a little slow. That's Soggy. He was chasing me with a quart bottle of beer, trying to crack my head open with it. Because apparently the guys that I was driving were terrified of my driving, however I was driving. And that was it. And that was September 1st. It was Labor Day, 1975. And I remember going to my folks' home, going to get the young people don't even know Yellow Pages. I went to get the Yellow Pages. And I was looking up Alcoholics Anonymous. And where the hell do I go? And then, lo and behold, there's 319 AA in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, 10 minutes away. And I always thought, if you ever saw this club, anytime you saw AA on the door, you always thought it was a bookie joint in Philadelphia. Because you just, you know, it was athletics club or athletics association or something like that. You just thought they were taking numbers in there. And I drove by and I said, there it is right there. And lo and behold, you know, I didn't know they had a back door. And Lancaster Avenue is a pretty busy street. And I really didn't want to walk up the front door, but I did the first meeting. And that's when I realized that there was a back door. Now I know how to get in here. And I sat down at my first meeting and didn't identify with anybody. Didn't drink like you. Didn't, you know, I had all the, that's not me, that's not me. What do you know? That's not me. However, I didn't drink that week. Came back the following Sunday, and I heard somebody talk, and you know, and didn't really identify with anybody, but there was a Marine just came up and just stuck his finger right in my chest and said, you know, if you don't go to more meetings, you're going to get drunk. F you. What do you know? Now that's why I said under my breath. Remember, he's a Marine. I don't want to get my butt kicked. So I just, and so what I did was I stayed sober for 2 weeks just to let them know, hey, I didn't get to a meeting and I'm sober. And I didn't get to a meeting and I'm sober another week. And they said, good. He said, it works better if you get to more meetings. I did. And then one night I was still bartending at another bar. And I closed the bar down. You know, it was about 1 o'clock, and lo and behold, I said, what am I going to do? 1 o'clock, 12:30, I don't want to do anything, go home, go to it. And I said, you know what, I'll try the clubhouse. So I went to the clubhouse, and the clubhouse was long and narrow, and there was like four tables. And two tables were together, and then two other tables. At the end of the first table, I sat down for a quick getaway, the closest to the door, and there was four or five guys in suits and ties sitting at the other end. And one of them had a big booming voice. I just laughed. And I'm looking at him and said, boy, that guy sounds familiar. He really sounds familiar. And I'm looking at him and I'm saying, who is this guy? He talks a little bit more and I had coffee. I'm sipping. I'm saying, son of a bitch. That's Barney Morris. He was an anchorman in Philadelphia at the time. And I realized that he's a TV anchorman, and I'm going, where's the cameras? I'm thinking they're doing some type of AA story in here. And I got up and left. I just ran right out of there. I said, oh, I'm getting the hell out of here. So much for anonymity. Boom, I bolted. Well, I went to another meeting. And at this time, I was being told, you know, fourth week, fifth week, got a sponsor yet? No. It's about time to get a sponsor. We love to be told what to do early on. I just, to get that, you know, hair rises up on the back of your neck. What the hell do you know? Well, I'm only sober 3 years. Maybe I can help you out with that. And anyway, that Thursday, I went to a meeting. And it was in a little town called Narberth, Pennsylvania, a little town, a little community neighborhood. And lo and behold, that big booming voice is up there leading the meeting. Oh, shit. He started the meeting there with his wife. I'm there, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm sitting there. He comes up to me after the meeting. He says, hey, I saw you the other night. You kind of left early. You wanted to get by and say hi and all this. I'm here's this anchorman talking to me, a bartender at a shot and beer bar. You got to be kidding me. And he said, here's my card. WCAU, CBS, you know, anchor, Barney Mark. And he put his home number behind it. There were no cell phones back then. His home number. I had his home number. And he said, son of a bitch, there's Barney Morris, an anchorman, giving me this. I was humbled, and he said, yeah, I'd like to see you again. If you're, you know, if you want to do something, give a call. I said, that's the last time I'll see you. I ain't coming to this meeting anymore. That Friday, the next day, I figured I'm not going to go to Ardmore or Narberth or West Philadelphia because he might show up at those meetings. I'm going to go to a meeting in Westchester. Now, Westchester is like going to Alpharetta from here. That's how far away it is. It's just far. Son of a bitch, his wife is giving a talk there at the meeting, and there he is. And I'm thinking, there's something happening here. I don't know what the hell it is. And I was sharing that one time at a meeting in California. The guy came up and said, you know, Pat, those things that you were describing are what we call as an AA coincidence. So, yeah, what's that? He said, it's a miracle performed by God when he wants to remain anonymous. And, boy, I hope you stick around long enough to have experience of those AA coincidences. That time, he didn't ask me to call him. He said, call me tonight at 11:30 when I get off the 11 o'clock news. I said, I'm bartending, so call me at 11:30. Okay, I wanted to please him. He was an anchorman. I wanted to associate with, you know, people like that. And I called him 11:30 on the, back then it was change. You had to go make the call on the payphone. I'm at the bar. Hello, morning, Mr. Pat. Yeah. He said, you're whispering. I said, yeah, I'm at a bar, bartending. I can't tell you. Anyway, he said, well, what are you doing tomorrow? Let's have coffee. Okay. I showed up. Asked him to be my sponsor. I'll show you how sincere I was. I didn't ask him to be my sponsor for only one reason. Was he was a celebrity, and I wanted to be close to being next to a celebrity. That was the only reason. My intentions weren't pure and chaste. They were, he's a celebrity and that's it. After about a month of that, I finally fessed up and I said, you know, Barney, I got to tell you, the only reason I asked you to be my sponsor is you're an anchor man. And I can tell people I know who Barney and, you know, Morris is and all that crap. He said, okay. He said, did it keep you sober? Did you drink? I said, no, I didn't drink. Get me sober. He said, well, help me. So he said, don't worry about it. He said, that's a step in the right direction. He did goofy things. I used to have a van. I got fired from that bartending job, and I really got pissed why I got fired. I was a thief. but I wasn't as big a thief as my nephew. No, actually, I can't take his inventory and say he was a thief, but he's a pain in the ass. I can't say that. Anyway, sorry about that. I was a thief, and the reason I was so angry at him getting fired by the owner was I wasn't as big a thief as the four other bartenders were. Because when I got hired as a bartender, they said you got to knock down $50 out of the till every night. What are you talking about? He said, well, you got to, you know, hold out $50, put it in your pocket. I said, well, why won't I do that? He said, it's not my money. He said, well, if you don't do that, the owner's going to realize that we're going to, you know, all the bartenders have been taking money from them, and if you show in the right register, it ain't going to work. Well, I compromised. I took 20. I didn't go take the 50. I said, I'll just take 20 and satisfy them and not be as big a thief as that was a tough amends to make. I had to pay back. I paid back. I don't know how much, a couple $100, whatever. And I got fired from that job. And then I got a job as selling nailing and stapling guns, like you see roofers and carpenters use to nail down wood and subfloors and ceiling and tiles. Problem with that job is you're dealing with roofers all the time. And guess what? I'm terrified of heights. I can't get up on the three rungs of a ladder without getting woozy. Oh. So I didn't make it but I had all this stuff in my van, and he got in the van one day and he said, if your van is this messy, your mind is messed up. Well, what the hell are you talking about? This is a fan. What's that have to do with my mind? And he said, everything. He said, your life's not in order. This is represents what your life is like. I got a real big resentment on that. And he said, get over it. And I did. But that helped me. That helped me, and I was grateful that he told me those things. Because I share those things now with the new people that I work with. And they get a little resentful. And they get a little angry. And I say, good. I'm happy that you're angry at that. It should make you angry at that. You know, I don't like to. I didn't like being undressed by my sponsor, but you know what? It was part of me growing up and maturing in this program, and it meant everything to me. I stopped drinking in 1975. Biggest part of my, I retired recently, and I was blessed, and I'm working now with new people, and I'm working with, as I mentioned, my nephew, and one of my nephews called me yesterday, and he said, you know, Uncle Pat, I just wanted to tell you, and he's about 4.5 months sober now, and he said, I'm thankful to be grateful. Oh, wow. That is a big, big step from where he was. Because 35, 36 years old, he couldn't see himself not drinking for the rest of his life. He just, how are you going to not drink for the rest of your life? And he didn't believe me. And I said, Nevin, you just do it a day at a time. You get to a meeting, and you listen, you participate, you get a sponsor, you do the things that you need to do to stay sober in this program. And he went from one of those people I told you about that you just don't understand. Yes, I do. To now, he's to saying, I do understand. I was glad to share with him what my sponsor shared with me yesterday. And that was, you know, Pat, I can tell people that I'm sober 7 or 8 years, and that's how long he was sober at the time. He said, but the person that has less than a month is more impressed with your 93 days than they are with my 7 and 8 years. So don't say you don't have something to share. Because if you have 2 days, or somebody has 1 day. Share how you made it to the second day. If you have 31 days, or somebody has 30, tell them how you got to that 31st day. And I was happy to do that. In AA, they say there are paradoxes. And I always screw this up, but I'm going to try it anyway. Paradox is we got to die to live. We got to give it away to keep it. I'm a big believer in that. We got to surrender to win. Boy, that was a tough one. You talk to somebody who is competitive in sports, and you just don't surrender. You know, you might get your ass kicked, but you don't surrender. You fight on. I mentioned Virginia Tech. They brought in 73 of us as my freshman year. And the first 2 weeks, there was 27 left. They ran everybody off. At the end of the year, there was 13, and I was one of the 13. And somebody asked me, well, why did you stay if you didn't like it so much? I said, well, it's easy. As bad as it was here, I'd have been killed if I went back home. It's easier to say I got thrown out of school than I quit. And we just didn't quit. So to surrender to win was, you know, crazy. But I heard somebody once say in this program, he said, it's like, I think it was Clancy I, and he shared it, and he said, it's like getting into a ring with Muhammad Ali or Joe Frazier or Mike Tyson, and this time you fought him 10 times now, and you still get knocked out of the ring. But, you know, this time it's going to be different. We get back in the ring, and boom, same thing happens. And then finally, we throw in the towel. And then we get to the corner, and all of a sudden, we start feeling better. So I know how to do it this time. I'm going to throw little bits of towel in. And the trick is, throw the towel in, never pick it up, leave it alone, move on. Surrender to win. And that is you know, extremely important to me. And I can't tell you that, as I said earlier, the promises in this program are unbelievable. You're cheating yourself if you don't stay in till you have that aha moment. I've had that now with my nephew yesterday and a couple other guys that I'm working with. They finally realize, they say, I get it. And they're giving themselves a chance. I am so grateful that this program. I have the brother that shared the program with me. He will have 41 years in December. He and I had to give up some sobriety days because we misread the 11th step, thought through prayer and medication. and I took Valium my first couple of weeks. And my son Barney said, "You got to give that up." You know, he said, "We're sober from the neck up, and that ain't going to work for you." And I had to give up 14 days. Pissed me off. My first major resentment in AA. I'm like, 14 days. I don't know if you're that early on where 14 days mean a lot. I understand. And I'm glad I did. I have a sister in the program that just celebrated 26 years sobriety. I have another sister that just celebrated 7 years. Another brother that's 25 years sobriety. I have 5 nephews in this program. 4 of them are doing great. One's doing okay when he's not drinking. It's amazing how that works. So, that said, it is 9:03, and I hate speakers that go too long. I'd rather cut it short. I want to thank Tim and Tim for asking me, and for those of you who heard me at the barbecue, I feel sorry for you, Fred. That's brutal. I don't know if I want to listen to myself twice. So anyway, I want to thank you for being here, and thank you for the opportunity to share my story.
Child.